I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to the Second Tier Podcast. I'm Ryan Dilks, and I'm joined by Enzo Maresca's stock now to my Enzo Maresca stock in February. It's Justin Peach.
Good day to you, Ryan.
Oh, Justin Peach. How are you doing, duck? Have you been mistaken for Ben Osborne in the past few days at all?
Unsurprisingly, no, but I've had a few people shout Jesus at me. I don't know why. I'm joking, Jesus. Of course. Yeah, because I said that I looked more like Gabriel Jesus. Not Jesus.
Oh, right. I thought you meant Jesus Christ.
I am the Messiah, if some people, you know, get called that sometimes. So.
Well, if you said Jesus, I probably would have understood it, but you literally said Jesus.
I know, but the gag had to land with Jesus rather than Jesus, otherwise it just wouldn't have worked.
I'm not sure. Anyway, welcome to the Number One Championship Podcast, the second tier. Thank you for joining us wherever you are. I mean, the twists and turns in this championship season are absolutely ridiculous, aren't they? We've got three game weeks left, and there's still so much up in the air. It is absolutely mental, particularly at the top of the table, which we will discuss very shortly. No one wants to get promoted. It's really getting quite balmy now, isn't it? But the relegation battle is still wide open as ever. Top six race, maybe not so much. We'll talk about that a bit later on in the show. And then we'll finish up proceedings with the polls and Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight, as we usually do on a Sunday, Justin. Let's kick things off, shall we, with Leicester, who have now lost six of their last 10 after being beaten 1-0 away at Plymouth on Friday. Three-word reviews here. This is from Alexander, who's a Plymouth fan. He says, heart, fight, determination. BMW says, never play Dakar. Back-to-back losses for only the second time this season for Leicester. They haven't won at Plymouth since 1955, which is quite the stat, isn't it? And it's seemingly a cursed place for Leicester because they were shite, Justin.
Yeah, they were not great at all. Not great at all. And it's quite surprising given the amount of, I mean, star quality they've got for the championship level. You're half expecting a team to go down to a relegation struggler, a team of Leicester's quality, and really put them to the sword, but it wasn't really the case. I know Leicester got into some really good areas, and they should have come away with 3 points based on the amount of chances they sort of had, if that makes sense. You know, if you've got a confident team, those chances get put away, those half chances become full chances, etc. Just wasn't the case. Leicester were really poor, and they were made to rue those missed opportunities, because now they might rue missing out on the automatics.
Yeah, well, back in January, February time, those chances would have been put away, wouldn't they? I think that's the best way you can sum it up. And I mean, you look at this, and I think this is a new low for Leicester. I mean that with no disrespect to Plymouth, but they have one of the lowest budgets in the league and have lost 9 in their last 15 heading into this. They've had a miserable few months, but Leicester didn't take them to task. And the closest they came was through that Patson Daka chance, who, bloody hell, he had an absolute stinker, didn't he? That one, which was hilariously bad, where he's about 6 yards out and slices it into row Z. It was so bad. But it pretty much sums up Leicester recently, doesn't it? This was really, really poor. I mean, maybe they were tired. We were talking on Friday about Enzo Maresca complaining about fixture congestion, because apparently they only got home at 3 a.m. on Wednesday and had to play this game on a Friday. However, despite his concern, he only made 3 changes for this game. Imagine, Justin, going all guns blazing and talking about how knackered your team are and only making 3 changes when you've got a squad the size of Leicester's.
Yeah, it's a bit contradictory, but I don't think they looked leggy. As I say, I think they created many more chances than Plymouth did. It's just a case of Plymouth took theirs. I don't think you can really say tiredness or coach fatigue, as I coined it in the preview episode earlier on in the week. I don't think you can really suggest that is the reason why they're being so wasteful in front of goal. I mean, maybe they could have got back into shape a little bit quicker with Plymouth's counter-attack, the one they scored from, but actually, it's just a really poorly conceded goal. I just think he wanted a moan for the sake of moaning to try and deflect from the poor performances from him, and maybe from the notion that this Leicester side have been found out, which I know is a statement that has annoyed quite a few Leicester supporters over the last couple of days.
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous, really, in tennis. Ridiculous how much they've dropped off in the first half of the season. They only lost 3 games. Now it's 6 losses in 10. That is just barmy, isn't it? And despite all that, they're somehow still in the driving seat, aren't they? Just in with the game in hand. They're not top of the table, but they are somehow still very much in that seat.
Honestly, that I mean, we can talk about them bottling it, but that 17-point lead they had at some point this season, whether it was January or February, the incredible lead that they had, it's really giving them a bit of a parachute to really fuck things up. They're doing the very best to do it, but that's giving them that breathing space to, take the foot off the gas, just completely sideswiping of a car, really. That's what it feels like. It's just been an absolute car crash of a second half of the season, if you like, or last third. But you are right. The amount of losses that they've had have been poor. The games have been relatively closely contested as well. Leicester haven't been walked over. It's just been a case of they're not putting chances away, and that pressure is just building game by game by game. And that's unfortunately why they're in the position they're in now. It is not befitting of a team of their quality. It's horrendous.
It is horrendous. And I'm not sure how a side like Leicester are still in this position, considering they've been so bad for weeks now. They have been pretty shocking, really, haven't they? Yeah. Bar a 2-game reprieve. I mean, that game in hand is a blessing, really, for them, isn't it? If they didn't have it, I'm not sure many Leicester fans would fancy their chances of going up right now. But the way things are going, would you really fancy Leicester to win that game in hand? You've got to look at their final 4 games. West Brom, Southampton, Preston, Blackburn. It's like Mario Kart with the number of banana skins I'm seeing there.
I mean,
Leeds and Ipswich are not holding up to their end of the bargain. So Leicester may very well end up stumbling over the line. But what I can say is this: if Leicester don't win the league, it's embarrassing. If they don't win promotion, it's humiliating.
It's a weird psychology, isn't it? Because any team that gets promoted deserves it, right? And if Leicester get promoted, they deserve it. But can you come away from this season and think, wow, what a season that was. What a season that was. Because it feels a little bit sort of discredited almost because of how much they've slipped up over the last few weeks. They were on their way, on the course to being one of the best teams to ever play in this division. And now they're refusing to go up. And now
they're
refusing
properly stumbling, aren't they?
They're properly stumbling.
They're not even stumbling at this stage. They're kind of just crawling over the line, aren't they?
It's crawling. The video of that guy taking a cricket ball inside that village hall springs to mind, where he bowls a cricket ball and he stumbles, and he face plants a stage. That is Leicester at the moment. And that's Ipswich and Leeds, to be fair, as well. But none of the three teams can really get away without criticism this past weekend. But it's just not good enough for side of their quality and consistency from the first half of the season.
Yeah, you're right. That video, by the way, is one of the most underrated videos on the whole of the internet. It's absolutely brilliant. It makes me laugh out loud every single time. But it is Leicester City right now. But you know what? Let's give full credit to Plymouth, Justin. Yeah. What a great result. A proper great night in the history of Plymouth Argyle, really, wasn't it? The first season back in the Championship. They're now 4 points clear of the relegation zone with 3 games remaining. So they're essentially there, aren't they? They are well on their way to Safety Island, you'd have thought.
I don't like saying anything right now. Look, this win, and as you say, I think the way you've coined it, in it, you know, being one of the biggest in their history, especially their recent history, actually, I don't think he's underselling it, because this is a win against pretty much a Premier League team, albeit not with the points wise or consistency at the moment. You know, but the quality of players that they have and the budget they have, this is a huge, huge win for Plymouth, and what it means for them staying up is absolutely massive as well. Is 4 points enough with 3 games to go in terms of safety? Not for me, not right now. The next game is pivotal, absolutely pivotal. But if they play with the same attitude they had against Leicester, staying up should be no problem. They had to ride the luck a little bit, and they took the chance when they came, and they defended for their lives when they needed to. A little bit of luck as well, but sometimes you need that when you're down there, when you're a relegation struggler. But are they safe? I'm not gonna throw my money on it just yet.
I think you might be being a bit harsh there, Justin, because you think about it, you look at the two teams in the relegation zone currently, they've got quite a bit of ground to make up with a 4-point gap with just 3 games remaining. And Plymouth essentially are 1 result away from essentially securing safety now, aren't they? So I probably won't go as far to say they are on safety islands, but they are, you know, they're preparing to shore up.
They're pulling the boat in, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
They're up to their waist in water.
Yeah, they should never have been in this position in the first place, really, should they? They were well clear of the relegation zone before Ian Foster came in and cocked everything up, so it nearly undid all the hard work from last season. But you know what, felt fair play to Neil Dewsnip, the caretaker. He did appoint Ian Foster because he's the director of football as well, so it was his fault to begin with. However, he's made up for it, I suppose, hasn't he? And he deserves a lot of credit for doing so, because I was a bit worried when he effectively appointed himself, but you can't really argue with a win over Leicester. Truly one of the greatest results in Plymouth's recent history, really. And I mean, it's such a good win that, is it fair to ask the question, should he be given the job full time, Justin? What do you think?
Is he going to go full Mark Bowen? Obviously, when Mark Bowen appointed himself as manager and his technical director or sporting director at Reading, however you want to coin his title. I'm going to say no. I think from his perspective, I think he falls in that classic cliched case of he knows the club, he knows the players. And I think in the situation that Plymouth are in right now, that helps a long way. He's got a coaching background as well, so he's not a mug. But I still think there should be an appointment elsewhere and allow Dewsnip to really do his dues elsewhere, if you like.
His Dewsnips.
Yeah, let him do his Dewsnips in and around the club and leave managing the club to somebody else. And hopefully he gets the right man in. Otherwise, if he appoints himself, he's Mark Bowen II, isn't he? You can't do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Plymouth should be looking to get in a young, promising manager to take them to that next level. And Dewsnip, as good a job he has done in three games, you know, they've got to be looking towards the future, haven't they? And go for someone a bit more ambitious. But he has done a good job, and I think he will be fondly remembered for the job that he's done in such a short period of time at Plymouth. Let's go to Leeds, Justin. They've now won just 1 in 5 after losing 1-0 to Blackburn. Three road reviews here from Leeds fans. KS says, typical Leeds in it. Lamnam says, sideshow Bob rakes gif. Actually four words, but I'll let him off because I found it funny. These are Rovers fans. Hitchin says, smash and grab. Chris says, Sammy Schmodick's baby. And there's only one Sammy Schmodick's says, Leeds falling apart. And it's the first time Leeds have lost at home this season, which is pretty remarkable, but it goes to show how much they're capitulating at the moment, doesn't it, Justin? But after Leicester lost on Friday night, you kind of just knew this was coming, didn't you?
It was a weird one, wasn't it? Especially as the game wore on as well, because this game shouldn't have been a low-scoring game. The amount of chances in this fixture was ridiculous. I thought it was quite an end-to-end one, and certainly with a little bit more quality, it could have been a sort of a 3-2, 4-2 situation. In Leeds' favour, by the way, because Ainsley Pearce was rightly man of the match, given the amount of saves he had to make. Yeah. And it's just a classic case of Leeds not taking the chances, or a big side not taking the chances, because we said the same about Leicester against Plymouth. And unfortunately, it pays to take chances. You have to keep your cool in these scenarios, and unfortunately, Leeds fell asleep. As soon as Blackburn scored their goal, actually, I was almost felt sorry for Daniel Fark, because he was just sat on the sideline, almost a little bit despondent, quite dejected, and he's just probably just wondering, like, how is this happening, and how is it happening? Because Leeds should never have lost that game.
That is the question that everyone's asking. How is this happening? You're right, Leeds had plenty of chances in this one, and if they're a bit more clinical, like they were this time last month or 2 months ago, then they definitely would have taken them. But at the same time, Blackburn could have won this by more, because there was that pretty goal-mouth scramble, and then Schmodick's was denied by a great save by Meslier in the first half. I mean, yes, Leeds did have chances themselves, but there's no two ways about it. They were garbage once again, but it's essentially the same story for Leeds. Daniel Farker did make changes, but they were still so poor. I mean, if Blackburn would like to return Crescencio Somerville from whichever player's pocket he was in, that would be nice. And I mean, he is one of, if not the best players in the division, but he was so quiet. And then Joel Pirro came in for Bamford, who's had a lot of criticism recently, but he made very little difference as well. It was just so poor, and it wasn't really a surprise, because that's just how Leeds have been playing since the international break. I mean, it's mental that one of these teams aiming to win the title is dropping off as much as they are, but for it to be two, maybe three, 2.5, it's crazy, isn't it? But that's what we've got here, Justin. It's absolutely mental what's happening before our eyes.
That's what I mean. It's so bonkers. Why does nobody want to get promoted? What's wrong with it? I know it's all about the journey, not the destination, but you know, at some point you've got to go. You know, you're outgrowing the division at some point. But it's just bizarre how it's playing out at the moment. And I think this is testament to the division. It is a melting pot of pressure once you're up there. And unless you're a really, really good team, it proves how difficult it is to run away with it. So that Reading team of 05-06, untouchable. You know, even Burnley last season, you know, almost untouchable. It is remarkable how these teams actually do manage it. But as we're seeing now, better sides, better finance side in Leeds and Leicester can't do it. They cannot do it. And it's quite remarkable how it's playing out. And as I say, this is a testament to the division and the pressure it brings. And that's why it's so fucking good.
Yeah, that's why we're here, Justin. I mean, this was a ridiculous promotion race anyway, wasn't it? Because we have three teams who are getting record-breaking points tallies. And now it's made even more remarkable by them all having their mini implosions. I mean, Leicester massively being let off the hook, aren't they? It's got to be said. If Leeds were playing like they were before the international break, they'd be pissing the league right now. But the reality is they're playing like this and it's pretty appalling. I just struggle to believe how badly they're playing now to how they were a matter of weeks ago, Leeds this is. But you can only assume it's down to them just crumbling under the pressure, isn't it, Justin? Is that it?
I don't know. I don't know the psyche of things. It's so difficult to put a finger on it, because if you look at both Leeds and Leicester, they're still creating chances. They're still getting into good areas. But you look at Patrick Bamford, when he came on, he didn't really offer anything. He was moaning at the referee quite a significant amount. There was a situation where it looked like he could have easily put the ball in the back of the net, but he really scuffed it and it got fired across him. There's just moments that just, I don't know, it's just failing. And is that pressure or is it actual quality? Because someone like Jorginho Ruta, for example, doesn't lack quality, does he? He's an amazing player, and Crescencio Somerville, an amazing player. But you can't always put it on these individuals. You need others to step up, and sometimes that's where you do need a number nine to come in and do the business. And Leeds and Leicester don't have that right now. They don't have a number nine coming in doing the business. Vardy's missing chances for Leicester. Daka, to put it bluntly, Bamford's in a similar vein of form as Daka is, where they look completely incompetent, and Joel Pirro's been null and void for seven or eight weeks.
The thing is, if Leicester and Leeds had those same chances that they had this weekend, this time 2 months ago, they would have put them away, wouldn't they? And that's what I think the pressure's just getting to everyone, particularly the strikers, but everyone else in the team as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But again, that's where really good goal scorers come into it, because they score goals no matter what. You look at Sammy Schmodics, for example, for Blackburn. I know he had a chance that was saved, but he took his opportunity when he needed to. He stepped up when he needed to, and that's where the really good goal scorers and good players in confident form come into things and really do what they need to do. And I don't think Leeds and Leicester have that type of player. I think Ipswich do to a certain extent. But I don't think Leeds and Leicester really filled that gap in last summer. And I know it's pointing the finger in a completely different direction to the one that maybe it should be pointed in. But unfortunately, if you don't have a number nine that scores double figures or gets near 20, you do make it difficult for yourself.
Leeds' final three games are Middlesbrough away, QPR away and Southampton at home. So tricky. It's tricky, but you know, I don't really know anymore with Leeds, because when they're at home to teams like Sunderland and Blackburn, no disrespect to those teams, but they're not winning them, then who knows? Who honestly does? Exactly. Well, a massive well done to Blackburn and a massive well done to John Eustace. They're now 5 points clear of the relegation zone. And you'd say they're just about safe now, wouldn't you? Which at one point was looking pretty uncertain.
Yeah, you would. I mean, credit to John Eustace and Blackburn for going to this Leeds, to go into Elland Road and beat a team who were unbeaten at home this season after a 5-0 defeat midweek. That is, you know, picking your players up and doing that is exceptional. And as well as that, the goal that was scored by Schmodics was outstanding, but the assist from Dolan was just exquisite. It made Route 1 look sexy. That Sam Gallagher flick to Tyrese Dolan to Sammy Schmodics, it was Route 1, but it was gorgeous Route 1. It was fantastic. And that's where you need to credit. That's where you do need to credit John Eustace, because, as I say, you set a team up to be defensively resolute and be difficult to break down, and they were to an extent. But they took the chances when it came, and it's pulled them away from the bottom three. And that's a big job, big job.
Yeah, it is a massive job. I remember when we made our predictions during the last international break, Justin, and we had a couple of people saying, "Guys, Have you seen Blackburn's remaining games? Yeah. Why are neither of you thinking they'll go down? Which I think is a testament to John Eustace, because they probably did have the toughest remaining fixtures of all the teams down there. I mean, Ipswich, Leicester, Leeds, Coventry. That's rough, isn't it? So for them to be just about there in terms of safety with three games to go is pretty remarkable. So John Eustace has done an excellent job, and I'm pretty confident that they'll have a better season next season, assuming they do stay up, because Eustace is a good manager and they should stay well clear of the bottom three. Where that ceiling is, I don't know, but he's in a short period of time made Blackburn really hard to beat when that wasn't the case, when John Joel Thomason was just sacked. So, a pretty amazing turnaround from him, really. Ipswich, they went back top of the table after a 1-0 draw with Middlesbrough. Three-word reviews here. This is from Very Finnish Problems. He says, league-toppingly beautiful. James says, in our hands. Matt's a Borough fan. He says, live, laugh, love, because Latte laugh scored. Live, laugh, love. Forget it. Well, with Leicester and Leeds both losing, it was over to Ipswich to see what they could do at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. And it was ultimately a missed opportunity, wasn't it? Because Ipswich missed so many good chances. In fairness, Middlesbrough, they could have easily won this themselves. Vaclav Hadley had to make some ridiculous saves in the Ipswich goal. Justin, the question is a draw a good result for Ipswich? Because I honestly don't know if it is. What do you think?
I think, let's say, if you rewind back to February, and if this fixture was back in Feb and Ipswich draw to Middlesbrough, then I'd say it's a good result, because it's a point gained. I think it's a point gained against a good
considering
side.
Considering their form, though, considering Ipswich were flying around February time, you'd have looked at that and thought, I'm not sure that is a good result.
Yeah, but again, this Middlesbrough side under Michael Carrick, they blow hot and cold, don't they? They're either bloody good or they're a little bit shit. And I think if you come up against a good Middlesbrough side, they're a difficult side to play against. So I think if this was in February, it's a good point. I think even now, with three games to go, maybe points not what they needed, but they came from a goal down. It's something that Leicester and Leeds didn't do. They didn't lose. Again, something the other two sides didn't do. I think it's a good point. I do think it's a good point. It's just a missed opportunity because they didn't take all three, and they had chances to take all three at the same time. They did give chances away, but certainly this, you'd back this Ipswich team to take all three. They didn't. I think it's a good point in the context of getting a point over your rivals, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure I necessarily agree. I know we're talking about hypotheticals here, but you've got to look at it like this, Justin. Ipswich have drawn two games this week, and if they won them both, they'd now be 6 points clear of Leeds with three games to go. They'd essentially be having one foot in the Premier League, wouldn't they? So I think you've got to put it down as a missed opportunity. In fairness, they are still 2 points clear, and that 2 points feels significant, because you may look at it and go, well, it's only 2 points, but it could be massive in 3 weeks' time. I mean, a bit of a problem for Ipswich is they've got Hull and Coventry away next, which are two tough games. Ipswich will be favourites for them, but Middlesbrough was very much in the category of Ipswich probably should be winning that. The next two are more a case of wouldn't be surprised if they didn't win their kind of game. So we'll see. It's quite hard to put your finger on Ipswich because they're having their own little wobble, but it's obviously not as bad as the other two. And that may be enough, Justin.
They're not quite spinning, are they, like Leeds and Leicester? They're just a bit of a stumble. They've tripped up a curb and they've looked around to see if anyone's noticed. And, fortunately for them, no one's quite taken the piss yet. But they're close. They're close. They can't keep tripping up these curbs. Otherwise, they will stack it and they will get laughed at, like Leeds and Leicester.
Yeah. You feel like if they get a win against Hull next weekend, that will be massive. So, only time will tell, but they're in a funny position, aren't they? Because Ipswich would have absolutely ripped your hand off to be top of the league with three games to go and 2 points clear of third place. But
they could have been more top of the league.
Well, exactly. They could have been. So it's a bit of a strange position. But you know what? I think Ipswich fans will have definitely taken it. A 98th minute winner from Flynn Downs saw Southampton make it back-to-back wins by beating Watford 3-2. Tom Cleverley's first loss as Watford interim manager. A pretty good showing from his side, though. And they can be disappointed that they didn't continue their unbeaten run under Tommy Cleves. I very much enjoyed that during this game when Watford got their equaliser late on before Southampton obviously got the winner. You could very audibly hear a man in the crowd say, "You fucking idiots!" It just really made me laugh. Three-word reviews here. This is from Liam, who's a Saints fan. He says, "We're going up." Ethan says, "It's still on." But with Southampton, Justin, the question has to be asked, has the door opened back up for them? If they win their remaining games, they'll be level on points with Leeds. How has this happened?
It's the bloody hope that kills you, isn't it? Oh, God, it's the hope that kills you as a fan. I mean, it's a bit of a get-out-of-jail-free card, isn't it? And it's certainly a win that keeps Russell Martin's team in the race. Such as the drop-off in the three teams above them, it's quite remarkable. Southampton should not be in contention here. They shouldn't be. They should have been, you know, three teams above them should have been, you know, a lot more, quite a few more points ahead of them. But I think what Southampton are doing now is they're showing a little bit more confidence in front of goal than the other two sides, other three sides, I should say. I guess the question for Southampton is, can they maintain that relentlessness over the next five games that they've got left? Can they win five games? I mean, they've done it before, that monumental unbeaten run they had in the middle of the season. But can they do it when, you know, mentally you're fatigued? There's pressure because teams, you know, the pressure is absolutely even more real now because of this is, you know, what's riding on teams above you dropping points. So can Southampton do it? Look, if they win their two games in hand, yes, they've got momentum, and that will just add even more pressure to the teams that are choking above them.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have this opportunity, but they do. I think that's the key thing here, isn't it, Justin, which you were just touching on, and it's a really valid point. But having said that, I don't want to sound too pessimistic. Even if Southampton win their two games in hand, they're still 2 points behind Ipswich and a point behind Leicester, who have a game in hand themselves. Now, I know everyone's having a wobble, but that's still quite the ask. I mean, the way things are going, it's not completely out of the question that Leicester mess up that game in hand. But still, you'd say if you're having to kind of describe it in another sense, you'd say the door is open, but only slightly, because Southampton would need to probably win at least three of their last five to stand any sort of chance. And then even that would be surprising if it's enough, because we are talking about a side here who have won 5 from 12. So it's a big ask. The chance is there, but it's still very much an outside one. They've still got to play Leeds and Leicester, though, and that's very much a good thing from a Saints perspective, but they'd have to win both those games. So that's why it's a big ask. The door is open, but to get through there is still going to be quite tough from a Southampton perspective. But as you say, Justin, it's the hope that kills you. Mm-hmm. Just before we have a break, Peachy, let's have a talk about one of the teams we'll probably be talking about next season. That's Sheffield United. They will start next season on -2 points, assuming they get relegated from the Premier League. It's after the EFL gave them a points deduction for the next time they're in the Championship after defaulting on payments to other clubs during last season. The club said it was disappointed but will not appeal against the decision. It's probably obviously very early to say, Justin, but after a terrible season in the Prem and now this, I struggle to see Sheffield United being a force to be reckoned with next season, assuming they are relegated. What do you think?
Assuming they are relegated, yes, assuming. It's a safe bet at the moment, but you are right. They have a manager in Chris Wilder who's won 6 games from his last 40 across 3 different clubs. There's problem one. They have a squad that is ageing. There's problem two. It needs investment. There's problem three. That's coupled with the likelihood that players will need to be sold, will potentially need to be sold to make ends meet next season. That's problem number four.
Can I add another one, Justin?
Yeah, go on then.
A lot of players are out of contract. A lot of players are out of contract. So I don't know. They're in a really tricky position. I mean, obviously, a lot can change between now and August, assuming Sheffield United are relegated. But it's not looking great, is it? Like, if the ambition next season is to bounce back, you'd say that's very much an outside chance at this very early stage, wouldn't you?
I would say that, yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. It's an outside chance. Maybe even a little bit further away from an outside chance. I wouldn't put the money on them. I wouldn't be confident in that at all. And as well as that, I think what you need to consider is, I mean, the Sheffield United were severely hampered by the lack of takeover when they were last in the Championship. That's still not transpired to be the case. They've still got a checkered injury record at the club. That's been the case for what feels like the last 4 years now. I know we laugh, but it severely hampered them on the pitch. There's just so many problems there. It's quite remarkable, really, that they're a Premier League side. It's quite remarkable that they got there. So fair play to them for doing that, and fair play to Paul Heckingbottom for delivering that. But next season's going to be a rough ride, I think.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't think it'll be as bad where you're talking like Sunderland levels of bad season, but it's very difficult as things stand to see them being a force, shall we say. So yeah, it's not looking good, and that's bad news for producer Finn, who's of course a massive Sheffield United fan. I'm not sure he'll be best mates with us after next season if things pan out the way we think. Justin, let's have a quick break. After that, we'll talk about the relegation battle and the playoff race.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Second Tier podcast, and it's now time for us to check out how our Second Tier multiple with SBK got on, which included our game of the week, as well as just a nice two bankers from Friday. We had Leeds, Leicester and Coventry all to win.
Fantastic.
So, not great, but we'll be back with another multiple in this coming Friday's preview show with SBK. However, while we're discussing preview shows, big news, ladies and gentlemen. It's now official. Ryan Dilks, the Dilks diehards, we have now won the predictions for this season. It's after Justin failed to better my score this weekend, which he needed to do to keep the game alive. But that means Justin Peach is officially going on a coach trip from Sunderland to Plymouth and back. How do you feel about it, Justin?
Do you know what? I did not pay attention to it. And then you just mentioned it now, and I don't think it's sunk in yet that I'm going to be spending at least 3 days of my life on a National Express coach or Megabus.
It's not 3 days, is it?
It's like a 12-hour drive, but it's not a straight 12 hours from the research I have done about it.
Yeah, so
I've not even considered that. So I'm going to have to take a week off work. I'm going to have to take a week off work to do this.
You know what you could have done? You could have been better with your predictions.
That's got nothing to do with it, if I'm being honest with you. There's been some gamesmanship throughout the campaign, throughout the season, that will be addressed at certain points. There might be an appeal to the Court of Arbitration of Sport as well. The Court of Arbitration, I should say. We'll see what the outcome of that appeal is, and then we'll go from there.
Are you willing to admit I'm the bigger championship expert?
Because
all I'm saying is I've won the predictions this season. I won them last season as well. I also won Diddy or Dinty last season and the Craig Bryson pub quiz the year before. There isn't much backing you up if you're disagreeing with me, Justin.
You're not a bigger championship expert than I am. You're just simply...
Based off what?
Better in the moment. And as well as predictions mean nothing, as people who might get involved in our bet builder might find out.
Okay. Well, you can keep backing yourself if you want, but
I will
say there's not much going your way. We'll put it that way. Anyway, let's get back onto the games. And quite the eye-catching result from this weekend, Justin. Birmingham 3, Coventry 0. Three-word review here from Matt. He says, Gary Rowett, masterclass. Derek says, every player immense. I mean, a significant result in not only the relegation battle, but also the playoff race. And one which I'm not sure I saw coming to this degree anyway. Birmingham had lost 8-10 heading into this. So what a turn for the books this result is.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable that they not only beat Coventry, given the state they were in midweek, but also convincingly beat them the way they did. It's remarkable. And as you say, Gary Rowett, masterclass. Is it football gods looking down upon Birmingham City again? Or are they just peaking at the time where they usually peak? in a campaign. This is when they go on a 3-game winning streak and pull themselves out of danger every single season. This is a very Birmingham thing to do, but that's not to take any credit away from this performance. It was, you know, it was a very Gary Rowett performance where, you know, they're quite rigid, they're quite defensive, they're very difficult to play against, and they win convincingly. It's incredible how they do it. But as I say, for a team that was on the floor literally in midweek with that Cardiff defeat, to them beating, I saw Deion Sanderson face down on the floor when Josh Bowler scored the goal. They were literally on the floor to them beating a team who have an FA Cup semi-final next weekend against Manchester United and are in contention for the playoffs. It is a fantastic result, and you could feel the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, the atmosphere was brilliant. I mean, I did see a pretty cringy video of the chairman, Tom Wagner. Tom Wagner, I should say, not Tom Wagner. Where he was giving it, you know, very American phrases like, "This is our house, let's go," that kind of thing, where he was walking past the fans, and I was a bit like, ooh.
It was Coventry's house a few seasons ago as well, actually.
It also was, yes, very right. But I mean, considering their recent form, to beat a team as good as Coventry is, and to do it comfortably as well, is pretty remarkable. But it's pretty significant because Birmingham's next two games are against Huddersfield and Rotherham. The way things are going, one win from either of those two games might be enough. So it's an excellent result for Birmingham. Still a lot of work to do, but not only was this game significant in terms of the points, it also gives them a bit of momentum, which was something they were massively struggling with before, and a bit of confidence as well, which is something they've definitely been struggling with ever since the Rooney debacle. So good stuff for Birmingham. St Andrews was rocking, and now it's looking much more hopeful than it was literally before the weekend, wasn't it?
So on Friday. That's
how quickly it can change, but it's a really good turn of events for them. But for Coventry, it's not. Back-to-back losses for them, and it's the first time that's happened since November. All of a sudden, their top six hopes look like they're just about over, don't they? 8 points off. They have got a game in hand, but it's looking rather unlikely now, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd almost start to rule them out. There's still 12 points available for them, but they're now banking on Norwich dropping points, and Norwich has still got two games left at Carrow Road this season, so it's difficult to see that happening, to be honest, because of their home record being so bloody good. I just think obviously this dip's come at the wrong time. You say first time they've lost back-to-back games since November. I think it's an incredible feat, but it just goes to show that a good start does pay dividends, especially for a team who aren't competing for automatics this season. You know, if you get off that good start, that's 6-7 points can make a huge difference, whether it comes to finishing in or out of the playoffs. And nearly had the same issue last season, so it's a case of make sure they get the pre-season right, and they can be a really, really impressive team, or a team to be reckoned with next season. So yeah, it's disappointing, but maybe there's one eye on that FA Cup semi-final, because Manchester United look very beatable.
They definitely do. I mean, it's a shame for Coventry because I enjoy watching them, and I think they're one of the more well-run clubs.
They're a cult team, I think, at Championship level.
Yeah, they're a likeable side, aren't they?
Yeah, it's hard to dislike them. It's really hard to dislike them. They've got so many good players, and players from
abroad
as well.
Leicester fan.
Yeah. Rivalry aside, everyone likes them.
Yeah. So I would have enjoyed it if they were to go up, but it's probably not going to happen now. And I mean, it bears repeating that if they didn't have that horror start, then they would likely be quite comfortably in the playoffs right now. So that's disappointing. I mean, I don't know if it's been a disappointing season or not, because I thought they would use last season as a bit of a platform for bigger things. But at the same time, they have reached an FA Cup semi-final. So, I mean, a playoff challenge with a load of new talent who have now bedded in now, I guess it's a good platform for next season, but I thought they might do better this season. But I mean, the worst thing for me is we're now unfortunately not going to have that scenario where Coventry get to the playoff final and FA Cup final, which are of course scheduled 24 hours apart, which would have meant the EFL and FA were trying to scramble around trying to figure out what to do, which I was really, really hoping would happen. But here we are. What do you think, Justin? Do you think it's a disappointing season for Coventry?
It's such an interesting question. I don't think it is. I think arguably last season's a bit of an outlier, so that maybe distorts expectations a little bit. I think if they'd have finished in and around the playoffs, it'd have been a good season, which almost makes you think in and around the playoffs again. This year is again another season. I know they spent a lot of money, but they're still not one of the wealthier sides. You know, it's all been financed through sales of two of their star players. They've had to replace two of their star players who literally maybe a bit of discredit to others, but they carried them to the playoff final last season. So replacing those, yeah, there's a lot of circumstances, again, working against Coventry, similar to last season. So I actually think finishing in around the playoffs, again, is another good season. You get to an FA Cup semi-final, that's a positive. I think next season is the one where we can really judge them, really, really judge them. Because if they don't finish in the playoffs next season, I think that's where you probably say, yeah, it's been a poor one.
Yeah, I suppose when you take into account that they have sold two of the best players in the division last summer, and one of them is literally so good that he's one of the most sought-after strikers in the world right now, then I suppose when you put it in that context, maybe saying it is a disappointing season is a bit harsh. I just thought they would be at least in the playoffs this season, maybe even knocking on the door of the top two. So maybe the expectations were possibly too high on my behalf, I don't know. I just thought it'd be a bit more exciting of a season than it has turned out to be. Has it? In terms of the league, in the cup it has. In the league, I'm not too sure considering they spent a lot of money. So I don't know. But yeah, there's still... there'll be a side to watch out for next season. I think we can say that for sure, can't we? So Coventry losing to Birmingham was obviously significant in the playoff race, and it was also significant for Norwich City, who beat Preston 1-0 at the weekend. A massive game in the playoff race. Preston needed to win to keep their playoff hopes alive, but, I mean, you even called it the biggest game since coming back to the Championship, didn't you, on Friday, Justin? So massive, massive game, but ultimately they didn't really show up, did they? Angus Gunn had a pretty easy afternoon in the Norwich goal, and it's pretty much killed off their top six chances, unfortunately. But what a result for Norwich, who all of a sudden have one hand on a playoff place, don't they, Justin? They've got one foot in the door,
absolutely. Yeah, I think they do, and I think the fact that they've closed the gap to West Brom, I think, is quite remarkable, because West Brom have been a playoff side, or a guaranteed playoff side, since what feels like December. So for the fact that they've now caught up with him, I think, is a testament to David Wagner and a job he's done. But I think the fact that they've gone away from home, they've gone to a team who have been, you know, incredibly strong lately, and they've come away with a 1-0 win, I think is a really big positive, and one that's going to serve such huge momentum going into the playoffs, because, as I say, Norwich's away form's really quite poor, really, really poor, actually. So the fact that they've gone away to a difficult side and come away with 3 points is good. They stayed in the game and they allowed that quality from Gabriel Sarri to get them the 3 points, and I think that's what you pay £6 million for, isn't it? You get that sort of player who can do that in the big moment, and they did that. And I think that's, again, just a testament to David Wagner for setting his side up the way he did.
Yeah, I can't believe they're only 1 point behind West Brom. How's that happened? It's ridiculous, isn't it? But I mean, it's not out of the question they actually end up finishing fifth, which would be quite astonishing, wouldn't it? But Norwich are essentially there. Hull are their nearest challengers now, 6 points behind with a game in hand, which doesn't sound like much, but as you were alluding to earlier on in the show, Justin, Norwich have Bristol City and Swansea at home next, and they've won 8 in a row at Carrow Road and have the third best home record in the league. So you have to say they are pretty much sorted as far as the top six goes, and it's looking more of a case now about who they're going to face and whether they finish fifth or sixth as opposed to whether they get there. And with that being said, you've got to take this opportunity to give a lot of praise to David Wagner, because he's actually done a great job this season, hasn't he? I mean, we did have Wagner-Votch at one point this season, didn't we? When we were like, how has David Wagner not been sacked yet? So for them to be here now in this position, Justin, is ridiculous.
I think going back to Wagner-Votch, I think Wagner's incredibly, incredibly lucky that the club were changing hands in terms of Stuart Webber to Ben Napper. I think if that wasn't the case, Wagner would have gone. There's no question. But fair enough for him being stubborn and not resigning, because, you know, managers like the payout when they get sacked. No discredit there to anyone. But also, I think the club sort of holding their nerve as well when that changeover was happening. I think it served them well, because they were so poor, but they had a lot of injuries as well. A lot of key players were out. Now those players are back. They are a bit of a force, and this is what makes the playoff conversation all the more interesting, because I think it changes it quite significantly, especially if Norwich do solidify their place in the top six, because they all of a sudden become a very, very fanciful team. And that's down to David Wagner turning. They're very solid, they're a very difficult, rigid side, and they allow that star quality of Sara, Sargent, Sines, even Ashley Barnes to grind opposition players down. He's got a system that's just working. And you've got to take your hat off to old Dave.
Yeah, you actually have. I mean, I'm not sure even the most optimistic Norwich fan would have said they'd finish in the playoffs around October time when they were losing every week, because you are right, they were so poor back then. And David Wagner was really lucky to hold on to his job. I don't really know how he did, because it was so bad at the time. But now he's here and he's got them in the playoffs and looking like they probably will finish in the playoffs at this stage. I mean, even Norwich fans will tell you at the start of the season, they did not believe in David Wagner at all. And that confidence in him just appreciated even more around autumn time. So for them now to be heading into the playoffs as one of the form teams in the division is unbelievable. And, you know, he has been helped quite a lot by having the likes of Josh Sargent, Gabriel Sara, who are two of the best players in the league by far. And then, you know, other players like Johnny Rowe coming out of nowhere and being as good as he has done. And Boye Sain's turning out to be a really good player as well. But still, you got to take your hat off to him, and he's done really well. Let's go on to the relegation battle, Justin. Sheffield Wednesday and Stoke, they drew 1-1. Three-word review here from Jenna, who's a Wednesday fan. She says, squeaky bum time. Got to say, the limbs for both these goals were absolutely sensational. The Stoke fans fell through the advertising hoardings for their equaliser, which was great. But yeah, it clearly meant a lot to the supporters here. But I mean, you look at it, Justin, is a point good enough for Wednesday? I don't think it is. They needed to win this, really, didn't they?
Yeah, they need wins. They absolutely need wins. It almost gives me a bit of a question for you, actually. What's better, promotion limbs or relegation limbs?
I mean, based off the greatest limbs of all time, which were definitely Birmingham staying up in the final minute against Bolton all those years ago, they're the best limbs I've ever seen. So probably relegation limbs are the better.
Absolutely.
Or survival limbs, rather.
Survival limbs, yes.
One of the limbs from relegation.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. So, I mean, maybe Rotherham fans because they're so used to it. But yeah, survival limbs or getting out of the bottom three limbs, I think they're certainly the better standard of them. But yeah, I don't think a draw suits Wednesday. Did need to win, and this was a winnable game against a near rival, so of course it was only going to end in a draw. I think it's again an opportunity missed, because obviously teams above them have dropped points again, but also teams that were sort of being pulled back into sort of the bottom three question, like Plymouth and Millwall and even Blackburn, they've all picked up 3 points as well, so it slims down those hopes significantly. So yeah, it adds a lot of pressure to the next couple of games, and obviously it's a case of, can they go away? I mean, they're unbeaten in three, great, but they need 3 points, and unfortunately they screwed that one up.
Yeah, draws aren't enough at this stage, are they? And I mean, you look at it this way, Birmingham have got two very winnable games coming up, and the next team above them is Stoke, obviously, who Wednesday have just drawn against, and they're 3 points clear of Wednesday with a much superior goal difference. So it's not looking good. I mean, hindsight has only made this an even bigger missed opportunity. Wednesday's final three games are Blackburn away, West Brom at home and Sunderland away, which looks pretty tricky on paper, unfortunately. I mean, Wednesday do have a good habit of pulling rabbits out of the hat with results, which you just don't see coming. But I mean, what do they need? They probably need two wins at least, don't they? So I'd say this draw is a bit of a hammer blow to their survival hopes, and you know, two wins at least from three games, that's not ideal at all, is it, for Wednesday?
I think maybe the conversation, especially after the next game, will start shifting to actually how good of a job did Danny Rule do? Because I think I was looking at it the other week, if he'd taken charge at the start of the season, Sheffield Wednesday would probably be around 13th, 14th, because the amount of points he's accumulated in charge at Hillsborough. But I think, especially when you go ahead against a relegation rival, and then you get pegged back, it just makes it all the more difficult. And that's where I've sort of been talking about the ability for Wednesday to keep going. How can they do it? Can they do it? And unfortunately, the late goals, or the goals that they're conceding after going ahead, sort of showing that maybe they don't have enough in them.
Yeah, if they stay up from this stage, it will be ridiculous. And, you know, you just mentioned Danny Rule then, Justin. Danny Rule has done an unbelievable job this season, but, you know, he's not a miracle worker, is he?
That's what they needed.
This may seem like it's a bridge too far. There's still hope, because, you know, they, as I say, they do have a habit of pulling results out of nowhere, but it would be pretty ridiculous if they did stay up from this stage. And the final game we'll discuss, Justin, is Bristol City Huddersfield. Bristol City scored a 100th minute penalty to draw 1-1. Was it a penalty though, Justin?
I don't think it was. I don't think it was. I think referees made a mistake. And look, you know, I know we go on about standards in refereeing, but the conversation around the referee costing Huddersfield a place in the Championship is complete bollocks, because Huddersfield have been shit all season. I know the manner of them dropping 2 points late in the game does have an impact on the table, but also so does being shit for 99% of the season. That also has an impact on the table, not one refereeing decision. So I want to sort of throw that one out there, but it wasn't a penalty. Ref made a mistake. Huddersfield should have taken all 3 points, but look, they've got to bounce back. They've got to bounce back. They're not doing enough to win games convincingly at the moment, because they can't score a second goal. They can't kill games off. Not been able to do it all season.
Yeah, well, you're right. Huddersfield have been shit all season. So if they do go down, it won't be down to refereeing decisions. However, I just think giving this decision right at the end of the game is absolutely mental. I will point out there was only 5 minutes of added time, apparently, and this happened 10 minutes into added time. But I don't think it was a penalty. And even if it was, you have got to be so certain to give a penalty at that stage in the game. I don't know how it's been given, but it's disgraceful, really, with Huddersfield being in the position that they're in, because this could send them down, obviously, as we were alluding to. They have been shit all season, so that will be the main factor. But if they won, they would have gone 20th, Justin. So losing 2 points like that is massive in this relegation battle, but instead they're stuck in the bottom three. And sorry to say a naughty word, but this is where things like VAR come into the conversation, because there's so much at stake for these teams that you have to mention it. Having said that, I'm not sure VAR would have overturned this. At the same time, I don't think it would have been given if the original decision was not a penalty. So that's the kind of decision it was. And when there's that much doubt, you can't give that in the 100th minute of a game. You simply can't. But that's my bugbear with it anyway, Justin. I mean, Huddersfield have got Swansea and Birmingham at home in their next two games before Ipswich away on the final day. So Huddersfield have got to make the most of these next two games, haven't they, Justin? It's essentially do or die at this stage.
It is do or die. I mean, this game was, but again, it comes down to ability to kill games off. And as I say, they've not been able to do it all season, which is why they've been pegged back so often. It's what cost Darren Moore his job. They've got to be more convincing in these games. They're not good enough to see games out. Are they fit enough to see games out? There's a question mark there as well. So, yeah, huge couple of weeks coming up for Huddersfield, because at the minute, it's looking bleaker than bleak right now, because teams above them are picking up points and, yeah, they're just tripping.
Yeah, and we were just talking about Wednesday a second ago and how bleak it's looking for them. Huddersfield are on the same points. They've got a better goal difference, which could play into things as time goes on. But, you know, the teams above them have got pretty decent fixtures coming up. So that's why Huddersfield have to make the most of these coming games. Otherwise, that'll be it. They'll go down. All right, let's do the polls, Justin. This is the part of the show where we give the listeners three questions on Twitter, because we want to get their thoughts on everything to do with the Championship. So the first question we asked was this. Who's winning the league? Nice, simple one. Ipswich leads Leicester. Who are you saying, Justin?
Southampton.
Okay. If Southampton were an option, would you actually say Southampton?
They're the only team that's in form.
So, are they? They're not even in great form, are they? What, five wins?
Yeah, won the last two. It's a little bit more convincing than the likes of Leicester.
I mean, anything's more
Leicester
convincing than that, Justin. But I mean,
exactly.
Come on, 5 wins from 12 isn't really form. But
yeah, but they're picking it up.
Who are you saying for winning the league?
How dare you? How dare you? I'll go with Ipswich because they're in the driving seat at the moment. But I don't know.
Are they in the driving seat? Leicester have got the game in hand, though, haven't they?
Yeah, but it's Leicester. It's Leicester.
I know it is.
It's Leicester,
Justin.
And Maresca keeps playing Patson Daka, so no, they're not in the driving seat.
Yeah, they're in the driving seat, but any moment that driving seat is going to fall through the car floor and leaving them on the motorway.
Yeah.
So who's winning the league? We put the question to the listeners. 45% said Ipswich. 36% said Leicester, 19% said Leeds. That feels significant, Justin. After Norwich's win, is the playoff race over, yes or no?
I think it is. I mean, Hull have got a game in hand, but again, just can't see Norwich dropping any more points at home. So that's the significant one.
Yeah, it may maybe even be a case that Hull might be better off aiming at West Brom, might they? Because as we were saying, with Norwich's home record, it's difficult to see them not getting a top six place at this stage. 71% of people said yes, the playoff race is over. 29% said no. And finally, who's more handsome, Justin or Ryan?
I think I'm more universally handsome than you are.
Fair. You are a handsome man, and you also do a lot of CrossFit, whereas I literally sat on my sofa while eating a takeaway pizza 12 inches last night, and you know what? I don't regret it.
Why did we need the measurement? Wait, are you talking about the pizza?
Just... I am talking about the pizza, yes, I was just rushing away at that after.
Don't say that.
Jesus.
Jesus.
Let's just give the polls. 58% of people said you, 42% said me. So quite close. I'll take that. I thought it may be a bit more of a landslide than that. But you know what? Maybe if I did CrossFit, it may be a bit different, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wouldn't be. Wouldn't be though, would it?
Now it's time for this.
Hi, Simon, Grace and Edge.
Yes, it's time for Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. So I'm going to ask Justin to name eight of a certain subject. All he's got to do is name all eight. So, for example, if I would say, name Steve Bruce's last eight clubs, and he would say Villa, that's one down. Newcastle, another down. But if Justin were to then say Weymouth, he would lose a life. So all he needs to do is give me all eight answers without losing all of his lives. And you can get involved in the fun by sending in your Hateful Eights for either Justin or I to answer. Send them into secondtierpod@gmail.com, and you could get a shout out the next time we do a Hateful Eight. Alternatively, just play along at home and let us know how many you get. This question is a great one. This is from Michael Dixon. So thank you very much, Michael, for sending this one. This is a top tier Hateful Eight. He says, there were eight outfield players who have played a championship game this season and are still playing in the championship who have also played for England. Can you name them? Emphasis, Justin, on have played a championship game this season, outfield players, and are still playing in the championship now. So, for example, James Ward-Prowse did play for Southampton first game of the season, but doesn't count here.
Okay.
So go on, Justin. Eight England players who are still playing in the championship now.
Ooh, I mean, the first one that popped into my head was Harry Winks.
Harry Winks is correct. He has 10 England caps, his last one being 4 years ago. So that is correct. One down, Justin. You've got three lives, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Simon. Jake Livermore's the other one.
Jake Livermore, yes. Seven England claps, yes. Seven. How? But that is correct. So that's two down, six to go.
Johnny Howson's never played for England.
You're right, yes. Well done.
let's go to Leeds. I feel like Leeds would be a good place to go. Patrick Bamford got capped.
He did. You're right. He got one England cap, and it was against Andorra in 2021. So that's fucking three hell. Down.
Patrick Bamford got capped.
Yes, he did, somehow. Five to go, Justin.
Incredible. That's tickled me. James Justin as well. Because he was so unfortunate because he started to break through into the England team, into England squads, and he got picked up another knee injury, didn't he?
You are correct. That's one England cap against Hungary a couple of years ago. James Justin is correct. That means you're halfway there, Justin. You have missed out a pretty obvious one, I will point out.
Connor Cody.
That's not the person I was referring to, but that is correct. 10 England caps. A bit mad to think that he was in the squad at the last World Cup, but spent most of the season warming the bench for Leicester. So that is correct. You've got three remaining, Justin. May I recommend staying at Leicester?
Staying at Leicester. He said there's an obvious... Oh, Jamie Vardy.
Yes. I don't know how you didn't say him earlier. Jamie Vardy is correct. 26 England caps and 7 goals. That means you've got two remaining, Justin. These ones are a bit tricky, but there are two left.
Two remaining. I'm trying to think, is anybody at Stoke? I feel like they would sign a 35-year-old who's played one game for England... And he's useless. A bit like Phil Jagielka last season, actually.
He was all right.
Yeah, he's 40. Ooh, nah, this is
you
tricky.
Doing
now.
That when you were 40.
See, I want to say Fabio Carvalho because there was a lot of debate over whether they wanted to call him up to the England squad. But I want to say he went over to Portugal. But I'll say Fabio Carvalho anyway.
Fabio Carvalho is incorrect. That means you've lost one life, Justin. Two lives left. Two. Names remaining.
I'll go over to Sarah Sheldon's Scotland.
Oh. it's hard, isn't it?
This is hard. This is really, really hard couple.
You may kick yourself a bit when you hear the last two. Actually, maybe not one of them. One of them is a bit obscure.
What era? All Gareth Southgate?
Yeah.
Balls, he calls up anybody.
Justin, no, I'm going to push you.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to have to give up. Do you want me to just say two random names?
Please. Just to see who you say.
Jimmy Dunn.
He's Jimmy Irish. Dunn is incorrect.
He's
Irish for a start.
That is correct. Ellis Sims.
Ellis Sims is also incorrect. Unfortunately, Justin, you've fallen foul to Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. The players you were looking for, Cal Walker-Peters, obviously Southampton, two England caps to his name, both of them in 2022. And then the other one, definitely one of those you forget ever played for England. It was Nathaniel Chalabar. Came on as a sub against Spain in 2017 and played just 6 minutes, but it still counts.
I completely forgot he played in the Championship. Right now, I know he's at West Brom, but he was a player that was breaking through in the England squads under Gareth Southgate, and then he dislocated his knee and then he just dropped off a cliff, unfortunately. Cal Walker-Peters I should have got, but I'm not surprised I didn't get because the amount of right backs that are ahead of him in the England contention. So
yeah, a bit mad that he played in 2022, isn't it? But yeah. I mean, obviously an unbelievable player. Shouldn't really be playing in the Championship, but for him to get two England caps as recently as 2022, pretty surprising. But there you go, Justin. Unfortunately, you've fallen foul to Simon Grayson's Hateful Eight. And this has been the Second Tier Podcast. And we will be back again on Thursday to talk about all things Championship news. And I believe we have a game. Yes, Southampton v Preston. Big game. So we'll talk about that on Thursday. And until then, have a lovely few days. And we look forward to seeing you then. This has been the Second Tier Podcast. I've been Ryan Dilks.
I've been Justin Peach.
And a huge thank you for listening.
Second Tier is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.